Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 27, Text 14. The chapter is entitled Attack by Chanda Vega on the City of Puranjana. Gandharvyastadrishir Asya Maitunyascha Sita Sita Parivritcha Vilumpanti Savakama Vinimitam. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Along with Chandavega were as many female Gandharvis as there were soldiers, and all of them repetitively plundered all the paraphernalia for sense enjoyment. Please repeat. Along with Chandavega were as many female Gandharvis as there were soldiers, and all of them repetitively plundered all the paraphernalia for sense enjoyment. Purport. The days have been compared to the soldiers of Chanda Vega. Night is generally a time for sex enjoyment. Days are considered to be white, and nights are considered to be black. Or, from another point of view, there are two kinds of nights, black nights and white nights. All these days and nights combine to pass away our span of life and everything we manufacture for sense gratification. Material activity means manufacturing things for sense gratification. Scientists are conducting research to find out how we can satisfy our senses more and more elaborately. In this Kali Yuga, the demonic mentality is employed in manufacturing various machines to facilitate the process of sense gratification. There are so many machines for ordinary household activities. There are machines for washing dishes, cleansing the floor, shaving, clipping hair. Today, everything is done by machine. All these facilities for sense gratification are described in this verse as Sava Kama Vinirmuktam. The time factor, however, is so strong that not only is our span of life being expended, but all the machines and facilities for sense gratification are deteriorating. Therefore, in this verse, the word vilumpanti, or plundering, is used. Everything is being plundered from the very beginning of our lives. This plundering of our possessions and lifespan begins with the day of our birth. One day will come when death will finish everything, and the living entity will have to enter another body to begin another chapter of life, and again begin the cycle of material sense gratification. Prahlad Maharaj describes this process as Puna Punas Chavata Chavananam, Bhagavatam 7.5.30. Materialistic life means chewing the chewed again and again. The central point of material life is sense gratification. In different types of bodies, the living entity enjoys various senses, and through creating various types of facility, he chews the chewed. Whether we squeeze sugar out of the sugar cane with our teeth or a machine, the result is the same, sugar cane juice. We may discover many ways to squeeze the juice out of the sugar cane, but the result is the same. Omiginatimarandasya ginanjana shalakaya chakshurunmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupakata Mayam Dadati Sva Padantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Hadvaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Gandharvas tadrishir asya maitunyascha sita sita parivritya vilumpanti sarvakama vinirmitam. Along with Chanda Vega were as many female Gandharvis as there were soldiers, and all of them repetitively plundered all the paraphernalia for sense enjoyment. Let's see who's here. Hare Krishna. So we're continuing with this analogy of Puranjana. It's a very long sequence. It's several chapters in the Bhagavatam that we're hearing this story, this analogy of Puranjana. It's for the benefit of a king called Prachinabarhishat. So Narada Muni, a great sage, is giving some instruction to a king. And this is the story that he's telling of somebody's life. So Puranjana means the soul. The topic today seems to be the cycle of birth and death. And this is a topic that Prabhupada returns to repeatedly in his books. Prabhupada was always very practical in his preaching. He always wanted to make it relevant for us. In Srimad Bhagavatam, as well as in many other scriptures, very elevated and sometimes very esoteric subjects are discussed. For example, is the universal form a description of the body of God, with the hairs of his body being the trees, the mountains being the hills. Oh, no, the mountains being the bones. And in that description are some esoteric things, things that are difficult to understand. So better for us is if we stick to some practical things, some simple things. And so Prabhupada repeats again and again. And this is a method of teaching. If you ever have the opportunity to give seminars or lectures, like Mother Jayabhadra, she's always giving seminars to our students, then repetition is a very useful tool. In fact, in giving a class or a lecture or a speech, the formula is you tell them what you're going to tell them, then you tell them, and then you tell them what you told them. Right? It's called an introduction, a body, and a conclusion. So I don't know if I'll do it, but I'll try. But Prabhupada uses this a lot. And it's one of the things about Prabhupada's books that even though every verse, every purport teaches so much, and in fact we can learn a lot everywhere, the most useful thing to do is to read through Prabhupada's books, not to pick and choose. It's not like it's better not to do buffet spiritual life, that we pick the things that we like, we avoid the things that we don't like, but that we go through systematically, especially studying, like Bhaktivedanta College, they study the scriptures. And that's the best method. The best method of learning is to study. So again, Prabhupada was practical. A lot of the times in this story, we've been hearing about the relationship between Puranjana and his queen. Now, Puranjana in this story is actually the soul. It's allegorical. It's a story. It's not about a real person, although it could be about anybody. That's allegories for you. So Puranjana is the soul. And the queen, his queen in the story, is the intelligence. That's his intelligence. So you have the soul and the intelligence of the soul. And that's us. We have, we are the soul and we have intelligence. But Prabhupada doesn't generally, in the purports, he doesn't generally talk about the relationship between the soul and the intelligence. Generally, he talks about the relationship between men and women. So there's a man and a woman, a king and a queen. In other places in the story, Prabhupada picks up on the allegorical element. He talks about the, like here there's these soldiers, right? So in the previous verse, we heard about some Gandharvas, so they're male. And there's 360 male Gandharvas. And these are 360 days. So in every year, there's 360 days. Well, okay, in the Vedic calendar. And then here we hear about the female companions of the days, and those are the knights. So there's 360 of those as well. So Prabhupada here, he picks up on this point, that the days and the nights, the passing of time. So for us this is practical, we experience this, right? And I think as we get older, the passing of time becomes more pronounced in the sense that it goes faster. Isn't it? The year seems like a when we're very young, a day seems like forever, right? Isn't it? Small children, the day, oh, it's so long, and they get so tired. And at least I remember this. And when it came to Christmas and it was snowing outside, and it was so exciting because it was different. So every day was, but now if it snows, it's, well, it's snowed so many years. And now you know it's cold and wet and horrible, and you don't want to play in it anymore. So with passing of the time, we become experienced. We learn about the world. And time speeds up. It becomes less interesting. What's happening becomes less interesting, so we don't pay so much attention to every moment. The moments, how to say? Yeah. I don't know how you'd explain it. But it's like the moments become minutes, and the minutes become hours, and the hours become years. So at some point, a year becomes like a moment. You go through 2010, you think, where did it go? What happened? What happened to that year? So days and nights, the more that we pay attention to time, actually, the more benefit we can get from spiritual life. This is a temple. We're practicing spiritual life. We're practicing Krishna consciousness. And so our time, we try and spend remembering Krishna, thinking about Krishna, perfecting our lives in that way. And the more that we can catch those moments, the more we can pay attention to those moments, then the better our spiritual life will be. And that's in chanting Hare Krishna. We do this meditation. Some people wonder why we chant Hare Krishna. It's a good question. But it's actually a practice of mindfulness. In Buddhism, they have a practice of mindfulness, trying to pay attention. So what am I thinking about? What am I talking about? What am I doing? So we also try and do like this. And in our sadhana, in our morning program, we try and pay attention. And this is particularly difficult during japa, because then you have the mind. Right, so we have our mind, who's saying so many different things. Oh, you're tired. Oh, you're busy. Oh, what shopping are you going to get today? Like this, so we start making lists in the mind. And sometimes it's useful to have a pen and paper. I find this, because I think, well, my mind keeps going over it because I'm worried I'm going to forget. So if I write it down, then my mind knows I'm not going to forget it, so I don't have to keep thinking about it. So that can be a useful technique for dealing with the mind. But this bringing the mind back, this concentration, this centering the self in the moment. There's an old hippie expression, be here now, right? Yeah, be here now. So be here now is a good principle, that the past cannot be changed. The future, God knows what's going to happen. So we should be here now. We should be in the present as much as possible. Actually, when I was reading this, I found it a little perplexing that Prabhupada talks about, in the coming back to the purport, he says that there, so that the Gandharvas are the days and the Gandharvis are the nights. And he says there, so there are white nights and there are black nights. Right? This is a white night that we're experiencing now. It's daytime, but it's a night. I was thinking, what does that mean? I kind of tripped up over that. I thought, what does Prabhupada mean by that? What he means is whether it's daytime or nighttime, it's nighttime. So nighttime means it's dark. We can't see. Like yesterday, there was a power cut. I was sitting on the, you know, doing something on the computer, writing some notes for the class, and click, all the lights went off. So I'm sitting there, it's black, you know, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. I'm thinking, okay, it's gone dark. Now I can't see anything. Right, so I had my artificial thing to make it daytime. So I'm sitting there in the dark thinking, what am I going to do next? Shall I go downstairs and turn on the electricity? I'm in the basement of the guest house, so it's not far from me. But I'm thinking, well, it's scary, you know, I'm a girl and it's dark and maybe someone else has gone down there. And so I was sitting there thinking about it. And maybe Prabhupada was giving me a hint about white nights. So what it means is that during the daytime, it's also like that. But it means that we see things, but we don't really see them, right? In material consciousness, I see you, but do I see you? Do I see who you are? Do I see even who I am? So we're not the body, we're a spirit soul, you know, Krishna's God. Do we see it? I mean, I don't. I mean, I can speak for myself. I wander around the world listening to my mind, wondering what's for lunch. Right? Isn't it? Every now and then my mind comes, oh yeah, I should think about Krishna. So these are the white and black nights. And the process of Krishna consciousness is actually turning on the light. So I walked to the door. It was good last night, actually. I walked to the door. It was black, so I was kind of like, I know my room. So at least more or less. I hope I was oriented right. I was going to the door. I was hoping I wasn't going to fall over the bed and bang my toe or hurt myself, bump into the altar. Got to the door, found the handle, opened it, and someone switched on the light. Someone went downstairs. I'm not sure who it was. I'd like to thank them, whoever they are. They went downstairs and switched on the light. So this is Krishna consciousness. It means turning on the light. Suddenly I could see, whoa, okay, there's my door. I can close it again, lock it, go back to the class. So and this is what we try to do. We try to turn on the light. And that's this verse, Amagina Timarandasya, Ginanjana Shalakaya. My eyes were closed, but my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. So I offer my respects to him. He's my teacher, he's my guru, so I should worship him and honor him for helping me to see things as they are. Prabhupada sometimes did this, he would take off, but a guru is like glasses. Right? I don't have any glasses, it's unfortunate, but guru is like glasses. So if somebody has problems with their eyes and they put on glasses, then they can see better. Right? You can actually read what's on the page, otherwise it's kind of blurry and or you have to, you know, squint. So the guru is the... Prabhupada had this wonderful expression, this transparent via medium. He created, Prabhupada had a wonderful way with words. His English is exquisite. Sometimes I read other versions of the Bhagavad Gita and it's just not the same. Because there's certain verses that I like later on in this chapter, there's a particular verse I really like. It's about time. No, it's about Jara, who's the daughter of time. The daughter of time is Jara, or old age. And it's a beautiful verse. And when I read the translation of Prabhupada, it kind of catches my heart and, you know, it creates this whole picture. So Prabhupada was very eloquent speaker, very good at explaining things. So suddenly the lights come on. This is my experience when I met the devotees. Although Srila Prabhupada is sometimes a little bit difficult to read at first because of all the Sanskrit. When I first started reading Bhagavad Gita, I'd read a purport a day because it was enough. You know, I'd have to look in the back to see, what's a Kshatriya? No idea. So I'd have to look in the back, Kshatriya, king. Oh, king. Okay, great. So Kshatriya is right. What's a Harinam? Harinam, Harinam, singing in the street God's names. Ah, okay, great. And you know, it's go like this. So, and then you have to kind of hold it together, the ideas. But after some time, we get to know what the Sanskrit words mean, and we can read fluently. And Prabhupada's verses explanations are wonderful. So again, Prabhupada brings us back to practicality. In the purport, he talks about present-day life. He talks about machines, how we do everything with machines, like this thing. This is a machine. Right? Machines used to be nuts, cogs and wheels and things that move. Right? Things that move, like a car is a machine or a cart is a machine. Now we've got machines that don't move. At least not obviously. This doesn't have any movement, but it's still a machine. And this is, it's called Yantravidhi, the knowledge of machines, and it's the knowledge of asuras, or it's the knowledge of, the word is demons, but it's knowledge of the people who don't believe in God. Asura means someone who doesn't believe in God. And in the Mahabharata, Arjuna saved an asura, he saved a demon, Maya Danava. He was going to be consumed by Agni in a great fire, the Kandava forest. And Arjuna saved him from the fire, and Mayadhanava said, I want to do something for you. Can I give you the knowledge of machines? Can I give you Yantravidhi? And Arjuna and Krishna was there, and he said, don't take it. He said, don't take the knowledge of machines. It's very dangerous. That's interesting. Very dangerous knowledge. So, although not all machines, I mean, a car is a chariot is a machine, right? So you have a wheel. It's the simplest machine known to man. It moves. It helps with a wheel and a cart on the wheel. Then you can move a lot of weight. So these are okay. But the kind of machines that we have now, I mean, Rudai Chaitanya has a lot of experience. So you know these digging things, diggers. He's big, noisy like anything, uses hydraulic motors, it's powerful. It can dig up rocks out of the ground. I mean, they're incredible. Shishi Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. Incredible machines, they can, you know. Of course, we're lucky, we get to use machines for Krishna, so that's a little bit different. But in the world, people use these machines, and the... if anyone does gardening, they know if you dig the earth, you kill things. You just put a spade in the ground, you turn it the earth over, and there's a worm cut in half. And for a devotee, this is horrible, right? For devotees, they're freaking, oh my God, I just killed something, and they're praying, and they're chanting to it. But these machines that they just dig up the earth and like throw it away, you know? I remember some pictures of the guest house, they had dynamite, right? Because we had, it was on base rock, so we had to blow it up make a space for the building. So you know, we just build a little guest house. Go to New York, you know, go to London, check out what they've been doing. So and this is how machines. I mean, it's possible to do these things by hand. If anyone's been to a cathedral in England, they have a lot of cathedrals, very old buildings. Those were done with simple machines, right? Like, I don't know if anyone's been to York Minster. It's a huge cathedral in England called in the city of York, and it's just you walk in and you go like this. And there you go, and your mouth is open because also, and you go like, and it's long. It's an incredible building. It's just the space inside it is just. And the idea of a cathedral, I mean, now it's a tourist attraction. You pay to go in, and, you know, there's people taking, well, I don't know if they're allowed to take photographs, but they're going around, you know, like it's a museum. But that's not the original idea. The original idea is you walk in and you go, oh my God. Right? They're like this. Can you imagine peasants in the 17th century? They live in mud huts, and they walk into a cathedral. You imagine what it does to their mind? You know, these stained glass windows and... just incredible. These were built by hand. I mean, they had little winches, but they had chisels, and very, very. If you see the way that they built these places, it was very, very simple. So it's not that incredible things cannot be done by, you know, with simple machines, but it takes a long time. I think it took 200 or 300 years. You know, so you got to be patient. That's the problem. Now we're not very patient. This is actually the main problem. If anyone tries to sell you something and say, this will make your life more convenient, watch out. Right? This is asura vidhi. This is the knowledge of the asuras. You turn on a light, this makes your life more convenient. What about the ozone layer? Right? I mean, I don't understand how stupid people can be. I mean, I'm stupid, I know, but like as an organism, the human race is incredibly stupid. I mean, it's stunning. It's stunning how stupid people are. You know, we're living on the planet Earth. We want to have convenience so we can turn on a light. You can get there's other ways of turning on lights. You know, you can have lamps and matches and, you know, simple things. And but in order for it to be convenient, we destroy the planet. I mean, is that intelligent? And Prabhupada would talk about the scientists. He says, you know, the scientists are so dumb. Because they create all these incredible things, but what is the result of these things? The result is that you destroy the thing you're standing on, which is not, you know, it's like you're sitting on a branch, right? This is the tree. So you can, where do you saw the branch? You saw it here, right? This is the tree you're sitting there. That's what you're sitting on. Now, someone really said, what we're doing is we're sawing it here. Here's the tree, here's the branch, we saw it here. I think, well, I'm sawing the branch, I'm doing something useful, we're going to have, you know. But what happened? Actually, there's a story like this in the scriptures, right? There's like a Bengali proverb, or Prabhupada talks about this. A man's sawing the branch of the tree. So he's sitting on the branch. Someone walks by and says, oh, don't do that. You know, you're in danger. There's a long drop. If you saw the branch off the tree, you're going to fall off. You have a sword in your hand, right? So you're falling off. You've got a sharp thing. You're holding it. Right? What's going to happen to you? But the man just keeps on sawing. He says, no, I know what I'm doing. Leave me alone. This is modern civilization. This is what we are doing, sawing the branch of the tree. It's going to snap one day. And we're sitting on it, you know. So, and this is what happens when we use machines. Anyway, I could go on and on about this. It's something that it just blows my mind. And you talk to people about it and they're, hey, you know, I'm helpless. I just can't do it. And this is actually, it's actually a problem that people, that we've become so addicted or so used to using machines for our basic things, cooking, cleaning. But I mean, Prabhupada gives this list here, you know. A machine for washing dishes. So I shouldn't laugh. A machine for, my parents have a machine for washing dishes. So why? It's so unnecessary. Prabhupada gives a list. We don't have. Although there are some advantages, in some ways there are advantages. You use less water, unless someone's very There's a way of washing a dish that uses very little water. And it's very efficient. Most people don't do it. Most people, it's like they brush their teeth. They turn on the tap, they leave it running. They make the plate wet and they wash it. The water's running. You don't need 5 gallons of, you don't need 10 liters of water to wash a plate. We don't need that, but we leave it running. So we throw, you know, the water just goes away. And we're washing and then we rinse it. So this is a very inefficient way of washing a plate. And when we do it like this, a washing machine uses less water and it uses less energy, so it's more efficient. But if someone makes their plate wet, washes it, and then rinses it, then it's less. So there are ways of being more efficient. And as devotees, we have an obligation to try and make our lives as simple as possible. It's very difficult in this world to not use a machine, right? I mean, would you be able to come here if you didn't use any machines? Where do you live? Where are you from? Germany, right. How many kilometers is that? 400 kilometers. So you could bring a horse. I mean, it may be possible if you had a horse and cart, right? Actually, it's the only way to go. Walking it would be a little bit of a drag, especially if you have a small, young girl. So in modern life, it's very difficult, especially the way we organize ourselves. It's very difficult not to use machines. We're kind of like tied in. And that's part of the point, is that because then we have to buy them. So it's an economic, right? It's economic. That's the reason we have machines, is because somebody wants to make some money. For my sins, I was on when I was a younger person, I was on an engineering course. Can you believe it? I did mechanical engineering. I was stupid, what can I say? Anyway, I stopped doing mechanical engineering and became a Hare Krishna. So I was on a mechanical engineering course. Maths, physics, thermodynamics, great stuff. It's the kind of thing that just makes, you know, it's just hellish. Almost the only girl, not entirely. There were a few girls on the course. The rest were men who were into drinking beer and, wearing leather and, so it's a great place to be. And we've got these big men to protect you, kind of. So we were on this course, and one of the lectures, people aren't stupid. One of the lectures was on something called built-in obsolescence. You know this obsolescence? Obsolescence means that it's designed to fall apart. Anyone who's bought an iPod knows this. Anyone who's bought a computer, anyone who's bought anything knows this, that it will only last for a certain amount of time. Why is that? It's they do it on purpose. And I was sitting in there in the lecture, and I was like, doesn't anyone else find this ironic? You can make a light bulb that'll last for 100 years. Does it? No, it'll last for a year. Because you have to go and buy another one. Right? Now, of course, the lecturer was very kind to the engineering fraternity, and he said, well, there's some new developments come up. Someone discovers a new thing that this thing can do. So if you make it very well, and it lasts for 100 years, it becomes obsolete, in the sense of it won't fry a pizza for you, or, make a, you know, you've got a computer or a mobile phone that can make a pizza and a cup of coffee, and you know, at some point somebody will want that. Right? At the minute, what can you do with a mobile phone? You can send emails, you can take photographs, you can do, you know, I mean, you can phone. right? They're trying to get everything on one thing, so you buy their one thing. So on this course, I was sitting in this class and thinking, my God, what am I doing here? Of course, it's cheaper if you make something simple. They make the plastic the right thickness. Oh, and you remember the warranty? You know those warranties? Guarantee, right? It's guaranteed for a year. Why is it guaranteed for a year? Because it will break in a year. After, you know, in 13 months, it will break. Right? If you can buy a guarantee for 3 years, that means it can last for 3 years. But you better keep your fingers crossed. You know, but then you have to pay for another, you have to buy that, right? So this is a word to the wise, a little. They talk about this in university. This is the classes that they give. They say, and they tell you, you are not, and they'll give you a budget. They say, you have to design this to this specification because this is how we sell it, right? If you build it very, if it's built very well, it'll cost twice as much or 10 times as much, right? So we want it this expensive. This is the specification. You better do it. And so they just, the engineers and stuff are just kind of like handcuffed, even though they know they can build a car that'll run on water. Even though they know they can make a light bulb that'll last for actually, almost forever, actually, unless you break it. But you can make it so it'll never break. It'll never stop working. So this is Kali Yuga. Welcome to Kali Yuga. I could go on about that as well. Welcome to Kali Yuga. So we're stuck here in this situation. And time's ticking away. I don't know if this clock ticks. I don't think it does. It doesn't have a... But time is ticking. And we may not be able to hear it, but, you know, in this course of a lecture, I mean, I've been sitting here, yeah, I mean, a little over time, but it's been like half an hour. We're sitting here half an hour. So, Krishna consciousness is a useful way to spend time. So this is half, actually, in the scriptures it says that when we practice Krishna consciousness, we gain time. So by sitting in the Bhagavatam for half an hour, we gained half an hour. Right? If we were playing, you know, snooker or cards or, you know, ping pong, or then we just lost half an hour. Right, so chanting japa, reading the scriptures, going to the morning program, serving Krishna, doing things for God. This is gaining time. And then we won't be plundered. There's all these people. Paranjan is really in trouble. There's all these people come to his city to plunder his city. So the city is the body. We shouldn't be like that. That we come to the end of our lives, and what have we gained? You know, what have we lost? So we've lost all our time if we don't spend it in Krishna consciousness. So before I finish, just to recap a little bit, so that we're talking about the cycle of birth and death. So some people think Hare Krishna's a morbid. We talk about death a lot. Over breakfast, we'll have a chat about, you know, the end of life. Quite cheerfully, actually. It's interesting. The devotees are quite cheerful on the subject. And the reason they're quite cheerful is because it's not the end, right? A friend of mine in London, Jack Raymond, she lives near Soho Street, and her mother passed away. I was speaking to her yesterday. Her mother passed away yesterday morning. And Jack had been in the hospital for a little over a week. Her mother was 88. She'd broken her hip. She was in hospital. When old people break something, then you know it's sort of, that's could be near the end. And Jack had been speaking to her mother about spiritual things, about Krishna, and they were chanting and reading. And her mother's actually quite a, she's not a practicing devotee, but she used to chant. She used to like chant rounds and like this. So Jack was talking to her in the last few days, and she said, "You know, Mum, if the time comes and you have to go, don't worry about me. I'm going to be okay." And it's like, what did she say? She told her mother, "It's like walking through a door." right? And on the other side is Krishna. So you don't have to be afraid. People are very, normal, right? People are afraid of death. It's very scary. It's like being told to take off all your clothes, you leave your apartment, your money, your wallet, your family, everything, and just walk out. Right? And you have no idea where you're going to end up. This is death. It's a very scary experience, and it's very painful. It can be very, very painful. So Jack told her mother, don't worry. Krishna will be there, and you don't have to wait for me. It's interesting, people actually have some, we have some ability to choose when we die. There's a little bit of wiggle room. People often die when there's nobody there. They're actually waiting for them to leave, because it's a very personal thing. It's a very difficult thing to do. So you're kind of like holding on. And it's like, okay, they're going to the toilet. And then you can let go. So it's often people will often leave. It's very difficult. The only way to have somebody there, devotees like to have somebody there at the time of death to chant and, give the person comfort, help them on their way. The only way to do that is to have somebody there 24 hours a day. As soon as you leave, they may go. Jai Bhadra had this experience. I also had this experience. I wasn't able to be there when my mother died. So, if you ever have this experience, you need at least three people and do a rotor. Because during the night, that's not easy. It's not an easy time to stay awake and to be attentive. Anyway, this was actually, I told Jack I would tell the devotees about her mom. Her mother's name is Peggy. So if the devotees could remember Peggy today, send up a little prayer to Krishna. Make a little prayer, pop it in a balloon. A hydrogen balloon, and send it off. Goes up to Krishna. Little pink one. You can choose your color. Pink one. Send a little prayer up to God, the Lord, on behalf of Peggy. That would be very much appreciated. And I like the way that I was very impressed with the way she was talking to her mother. I wish I could. She's a very heart person, So, unable to talk about these things. It's very difficult to talk about these things. I'm English. You don't talk about, things up front. They're always very diplomatic. It's very hard to talk about difficult subjects. So I appreciated very much that she was able to be direct with her mother and be very kind also, to have this kind of compassion and kindness and to help her mother and on her way back to Krishna. So I'm going to stop there. Thank you very much. Does anyone have any quick comments or questions? We're a little over time, but also we have guests. Maybe you have something.
You are in the field of intellectual, but how did you begin to sleep?
How did I stop being an engineer and become a good... you're very kind. Yes, you're very kind. You don't know me so well. How did I become so sweet? It's true, devotee, people change. It's true, people change. Becoming vegetarian, this was a big, big thing, that to have some compassion for other people. It's very hard to have nice qualities if we're killing. Right? I'm a murderer. Am I a nice person? Doesn't matter how sweetly I can speak, I'm a killer. Becoming vegetarian was helpful. Actually, when I became vegetarian, because I did it like that, I went to a Hare Krishna lecture and he was talking about karma, reincarnation, and vegetarianism. And I was like, I know. Oh my God, I became a vegetarian on the spot. And it was very interesting because it was very noticeable. There was like this weight lifted off me. Suddenly I became lighter. Then I stopped drinking. That was a good move, I think you could say. Alcohol left my life. There's the other principles, celibacy and... So last one, gambling. I always forget that one because I didn't bet on horses or anything like that. It wasn't something I was particularly interested in. Subtle gambling is something else. But so following the process of Krishna consciousness. So we have these four basic things that we do, although sometimes they're quite difficult. to maintain for a long time, and of people, especially modern people, to wrap their minds around these can be quite hard. And then there's chanting. So this is sort of negative prohibitions, and then there's positive things. So chanting Hare Krishna. So if I don't chant, sometimes we're busy and we miss a day or miss a few rounds or something, and then catching them up. But I notice if I don't chant in the morning, if I don't chant well, if I miss a few rounds and catching up, and that particular day it has a big effect on my consciousness. So I become a little grouchy. Being sweet is a process. I'm trying to become more sweet, but because there's still a few thorns, a little spiky. There's this cute little thing. It's like hedgehogs. They're very cute, but they have spikes, right? You try and pick one up. You can. The nose and the head is okay, and the tummy is fine. But if you go on the top, it's like scary, and they roll. You know. So sometimes devotees feel a little stressed, and they roll themselves up into a ball, and then there's these spikes. Yes. I don't know if I have time. There's actually a joke that I like to. Somebody did this to me once. I embarrassed myself on a course I was on. Someone was telling a joke. They said, and they started the joke. It was in a group. It was like 30 people from our course, and our tutor decided to lighten things up a bit because I'm a therapist, so we do trauma and stuff like that. So he tried to lighten things up a bit. So he's telling a joke, and he said George Bush died and went to hell, and I went yes. Nobody else said anything. It was very quiet. So it's English people, you know. These are English people. So he was telling that he was reading the joke. So he kind of put the paper down and he looked at me. And he said, and he looked at the group and he said, "This is after 20 years of compassionate practice." The group erupted into laughter. It was really embarrassing. Anyway, it was my own fault. I can't blame him. He was right. Anyway, so after they calmed down and wiped the tears out of their eyes, I dressed as a devotee. I was wearing tilak. I was getting on their case about being vegetarian. I was sort of the celibate monk who's here to save her. It's not a good profile, really. So they were all enjoying that I was embarrassed in this way. It was very funny. And so after they calmed down, they just sort of everyone took a deep breath, you got to listen to the joke. And so everything went quiet. And then he looked up again. He said, "But you should have seen it before." Again, it's sort of a flood, throwing ghee on the fire. So you should have seen me before. And that's interesting. It would be nice. Actually, with devotees, you can do that. Sometimes we think, this person has some bad qualities still. You should have seen them before. If you think they're bad now, you should have seen them when they were 20. Go check it out. It would be really nice if we could put ourselves next to each other, like a walking, breathing, talking version. If you could have Kanchanavalli as she was, walking around, and then as she is. That's Bhagavad Gita as it is. So, So not the Bhagavad Gita that's a speculative version and has all kinds of personal things in, but Bhagavad Gita as it is. So, actually, it's a little bit like peeling an onion or washing coal. So we're trying to find ourselves. This is another hippie thing. You've got to find yourself. So, I'm sitting here. Well, how do I find myself? So it means digging deep, going underneath all the layers. Who am I really? Am I really white, female, English? Do I have any other designations? 38. Am I really? I'm none of these things. This has nothing to do with me. This the body is. The body is white, English, female, 38. But I'm not that at all. I could be a blade of grass in the spiritual world. Krishna comes and walks on me. Oh, it's so nice. I just stand there. Did you know the flowers in the spiritual world move? Did you know that they wait? The flowers, because they know Krishna's coming, so they all come on the path. Right, the flowers come. It's a very interesting place, the spiritual world. So the flowers, they all line up, and so Krishna has something soft to walk on, right? So the flowers like waiting, and then he steps on them, and then they run. They kind of wait, and then they run. And then he steps on them again. They're like, yes! And then they... Yeah. Being the spiritual world's not a boring place. You can be a flower, it's fantastic. Running and then waiting again. Imagine the spiritual world is very dynamic. It's not sitting still. You know, it's not like here there's a painting on the wall and it stays there. It's not like that. Does that answer your question? Okay, so I'm hoping to become a blade of grass that I can run and Krishna can step on me. Be fantastic. Okay, I better stop there because Gunasrara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.